to offer more common planning time and increase class sizes, or not to? This question fluctuates directly with the teacher-to-student ratio, and the question of worth is one that hasn't been answered in education concretely to date. The two sides are clear. Controlled collaboration enhances teaching and learning. While class size has been a hot-button topic in education on the side of teachers and parents, seeing the logic as the lower the class size, the more impactful the teacher can be. This controversy stems worldwide and knows no border. Let's take a look at what other countries are doing in addition to the U.S. so we can broaden our horizon should this decision ever come across our desks as school leaders. I'm Joe Clossy, and you're listening to the Traveling Principals Podcast, where I bring you info and intel on all things education and from all over the world so you know what you need to move forward where you live. In the U.S., it's simple. Like almost everything, depending on which state and where within that state you live, you'll see a number of examples. Most commonly of which, however, is the traditional lower class sizes triumphantly persisting over increased collaboration. In the U.S., in fact, at least 70% of schools do not favor additional collaboration into the school day. And this research is deducted from the statistic that shows 70% of schools in the U.S. are unionized. A union traditionally favors the side of smaller class sizes. This is evident across boards in unions, minus unorthodox unions that represent charters or magnet schools that are unique in their designs, however. So, and I'm not bashing unions for this, but let's list the obvious here in support of this position. Lower class sizes assumes improved academic performance, increased student engagement, which leads to or corresponds with improved classroom management and discipline issues, and overall then improved teacher satisfaction. This is a no-brainer. In speaking with teachers prior to posting this podcast, that is the obvious, right? In looking at research and statistics, it's easy to see and deduce that logical outcome, right? If you have a lower class size, that would be what follows. However, what is interesting to note, over a period of time, although statistics showed improved academic performance of students in smaller class sizes with less management issues and more attention given to said students, a study conducted like the one in Tennessee in the 90s showed that when a sample group of smaller class sizes were compared over a course of a school year, as the months went on, this impact wavered. So in other words, at the start of the school year, everything seemed great. As the school year went on, as the months went on, they saw a balance in levels, regardless to class size. So that questions sustainability of a smaller class size. Now, again, there's some exceptions here. You have science labs that are taught and rooms can only house specific numbers. In addition, when you're dealing with CTE, these classes can't have large class sizes. So it throws a little bit of a hiccup into your planning. And should that be your case, I would consider not adjusting the class sizes in these classes due to the complexities that take place when you go over a max number that is a lot less than what could be your max average number per classroom as per like a union contract. But let's go back to this, right? Because the benefits are obvious at the start, and I don't doubt this. In my own practice, in my own career, I began at a large school with almost 5,000 students in New York City. We piloted a small learning community within that school that had only 400 students, and it was astonishing the difference in comparison. There wasn't even a comparison after no time whatsoever, and this did sustain. However, this program was brilliant and also fused in common planning time and collaboration periods, which were additional meetings to the staff that were necessary, mandated to attend. We also taught an additional course, which was a floating lab that added to the core support for teachers and students, which we rotated students in these support meetings and check-ins called case conferences on a daily basis. I mean, this had it all in that small learning community, but it did break all of the rules that were currently in existence. What do I mean by that? We got paid more. We had to sign some sort of like a waiver of rights because we taught so much throughout the course of the day, et cetera. So there was a lot. There was a lot there that we had to bend or break or sign off on, get additional pay for. But also when the rest of our colleagues in the major school were only teaching five periods, we were teaching six, sometimes seven. With meetings during prep periods. I mean, that was intense, but extremely effective. I'd love to riff on that one day if I ever had a podcast. Holy smokes. How about that? I do. So here's a little more about it because it's worth the conversation. It's worth the digression momentarily. First point, we did a daily supportive lab class in addition to the day. So picture it like this: English and history shared two sections of kids. Every other day we had a double period with the opposite section and rotated back and forth. Math and science did the same thing. We took 100 kids, broke them into four classes of 25. And that's how programming went, with an additional prep period there, or lab period rather, that swung between English and history and then math and science. So everybody had a double period of a different subject every day. We did additional meetings weekly where we held these case conferences for student check-ins. That was incredibly powerful. It included oftentimes all of the grade alike teachers, as well as a parent if possible, as well as a counselor, as well as a student. And it wasn't finger pointing. And I've done this a million times since because of how impactful and effective it is and can be when it's done right. It really doesn't matter the scenario. What I learned here and the message I want to give you is, you show students what they look like on paper, and all of a sudden, their actions, the course of actions, the path that they've taken to get to where they are now is real to them. We planned cross-curricular weekly. We held early college awareness and career options starting in ninth grade once we realized this impact. But we also had the ability for a counselor to only have 400 kids when in this school they had like at least 1,000. You know, how do you know your kids when you have 1,000? Our counselor could tell you everything about those students. So, you know, those were some of the benefits. It goes on and on and on. We had technology in the hands of students early. We had college classes. We offered more support for the core academics than imaginable, and all possible due to this smaller learning community. So just to riff on that momentarily, it is possible to do both. I mean, evil laugh aside, the collaboration was built in with the smaller class sizes, and that's why it was genius. And so let's look at collaboration then. We did smaller class sizes, but let's look at collaboration. In Finland, this is widely adopted. In fact, it's deemed as essential elements of the pillars of education systems there. It's so widely used that the concept stems to students in their process of learning as well. Students are given time during the day to work and collaborate, and students can learn off of each other during this time as well. So it's like, I don't know, saying it out loud, it's really awesome, but it's not groundbreaking. Right? Think of it as study hall on steroids. Think of it as work time while at work. I mean, now that I'm thinking about it, you don't go to work and only find out what to do and then go home and do it there. You do it while you're in the office. This is much the same concept when you think about it in that light. However, what are the benefits of collaboration? To better understand this, let's look at British international schools in Shanghai, China, for example. Here, staff have an additional common planning time built into their day, and either grade level alikes or subjects by department will meet and plan, conduct inquiry, or cross-curricular tasks. What's also interesting to note is the growing need for collaboration is evident in schools using the International Baccalaureate IB programs for students. As this is not only helpful for students in their efforts to achieve the diplomas, but also for the teachers to develop the curriculum, grade the persistent work, and keep up with the demands of the program requirements. After a quick span of the UK, here's some examples that I found interesting uses of collaboration time that were unique to the schedules, and therefore it's not every day or even every week, but it's there. Collaboration exists. So let's take a look at some examples that we found. So the first one that I found was the King Edward VI School in Southampton. This school has weekly PD built into the schedule during which teachers collab on lesson planning and share ideas. The Grey Coat Hospital in London. This school has dedicated collaboration time each week during teachers work together on cross-curricular projects and PD. The Magnet Carter School in Surrey. This school has a program called Enrichment and Enhancement Time, during which students work on independent projects and receive support and feedback from teachers. The Mount Batten School in Hampshire. This school has a Curriculum Innovation Day each year. How cool would this one be, right? Each year, the teachers work together on cross-curricular projects and professional development on that day. Like, wow. Once, like maybe at the beginning of the semester, once again at the mid-year, that sounds fun. Redland Green School in Bristol. This school has Project Time program, which students work in teams on projects that integrate different subjects and promote teamwork and collaboration. So there's one from the student's perspective. The Royal Grammar School in Newcastle. This school has Discovery Time program, during which students work on independent research projects and receive support and feedback from teachers. So that's like everyone. How awesome is that? Thomas Telford School in, I'm probably going to butcher this one, but Shropshire. This school has a personalized learning time program, during which students receive one-on-one support from teachers and work on independent projects. I love it. I love this. It was worth the mispronunciation. Yet, if you knew that countries that are leading the world in educational successes like South Korea, China, and Finland, to name a few, all are using collaboration methods of different kinds in their schools, because South Korea is much like Finland. It's ingrained in how they do what they do. So if you know these schools are persistently on the global top lists in education, and that defines persistence, to me, that defines sustainability. So I ask, which would you favor? Either class sizes of smaller numbers that seem to temporarily give benefits to teachers and the student, over the additional collaboration time? Because I wouldn't. I also haven't. At my last school, we created the only model that fused collaboration into the daily schedule of teachers. Is this the most fiscally responsible way to run a school? It's proving to be if teachers are willing to embrace the collaboration time, but if they don't, then to them, it's not. It would be the same if a teacher with 20 kids conducts average planning time and effort into their students, even though they have all this extra time. You know? So, I mean, however, if you took the time away, you don't get it back. Right? That's a lot harder to do. You can fluctuate class sizes. And most likely you will annually, right, as well. But does that mean when you're bigger, then you won't be as successful? Right? And that said, if you're bigger, then it shouldn't work as well as smaller sizes. So why have them then at all? You know? Why even consider it? I think smaller schools are more crucial than smaller class sizes. And this difference is like systemic, not just confined to the one classroom. I will also repeat what I said earlier. Some classes, you cannot fluctuate class sizes no matter what, right? So again, your labs, your CTEs, your hands-on project-based courses, things like that. You can get creative with what you're doing there, but there's not a lot of flexibility with class sizes. So, you know, something to consider always with this discussion. Now, I know some of you out there listening to this discussion will think that I'm incorrect. Class sizes make more of a difference, and the point of the podcast is to inform you that this is debatable. The sustainability of efficacy of smaller class sizes being used in the matrix of a school schedule over the possibility of additional collaboration is debatable. It's a preference at best, and it's debatable. I guess it's worth noting that I chose collaboration because I've had both. And if a teacher wants to argue that the amount of kids in their room defines successes, then I'd like to see how productive they'd be with an extra hour then in their workday. I mean, you want to push the envelope, a great education leader I know, Rushton Hurley, says, you put students in a room with cool things to interact with, and they're going to do cool stuff. So I say, if you give a teacher the time to create, imagine what they'll come up with. If you give a teacher the time to conduct inquiry, imagine what they'll find out. And if you give a teacher an additional person or a team to work with, watch out for what comes next. I hope you have enjoyed today's show. We went down the road of a hot button topic, and if you have any feedback for me on today's show, hit me up via email, joe@travelprincipal.com, and I'd be happy to talk with you or get you on the show to talk about all of it. So I'm Joe Colossi signing off saying, if you're not looking around at what others are doing, how do you know that what you're doing is impactful or effective? Thanks for listening, everyone.